Blog Talk Radio.
What I'm talking about. Hey everybody, James Bostic here with Conservative's Perspective tonight, live at Blog Talk Radio through the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Ditto for Thursdays. This is a live broadcast through the Patriot Nation Radio Network on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Thursdays we're kind of excited about because hopefully, should we have the requisite technology nailed down adequately, we'll be simulcasting, because ACP, in addition to being here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network and Red Nation Rising, the Internet Conservative Radio Network, WSTR Digital Broadcasting, we will also be appearing through the simulcast technology, provided we got it working, with News Without Filters. Raquel Oke's enterprise there, and we're happy to be associated with them as well. At the bottom of the hour this evening, probably right now or shortly from now, not long from now, they're going to be working in New Orleans again, and they will be taking down the statue of General Pierre Gustave Tonton Beauregard. And we are expecting a call from someone who was going to be in that area on the scene at the bottom of the hour. But before we get there, I got a few other things we're gonna go through. I drag this out periodically, and good cause, because they are wise and prophetic words, and as wise and prophetic words, they bear repeating. This is an article that I came across, an essay that I came across many years ago, 5 years ago, by Edwin Fulner. Now, at the time, Edwin Fulner was founder, and he was also president of the Heritage Foundation. It struck me the moment that I read it. It resonated very strongly with me, and ever since then, shortly after that, I decided to get into that was around the time that I decided to get into the podcasting business. I've told you guys all those stories, but periodically, this was one of the first things that I shared with people when I started podcasting. And every year, I drag it out two or three times a year because, again, I said they are wise and prophetic words. And as wise and prophetic words, they bear repeating. It is an essay that answers this question. What is the role of the people in America? The stirring opening words of the Constitution proclaim that it is the work of we, the people. In the Declaration of Independence, the American people had announced to the world that they were sovereign and free. In the Constitution, they sought to defend this freedom by creating a unique government for an exceptional nation, a government that derived its just powers from the consent of its people. And in this American Republic, what is the role of the people? The United States is exceptional because of its universal founding principles. At the heart of these principles is the belief that people are free by nature and possess inherent rights. The use each of us makes of these rights will naturally be different, and the outcomes of those choices will naturally differ too. But the choice remains our own. Freedom is thus inextricably bound up with living our lives as we see fit. This is self-government in the truest sense of the term. We, the people, need not slavishly defer to experts. We can be trusted to govern ourselves. That's why government must remain limited. The people have given it only limited powers, as described in the Constitution. When government takes more than we've given it, renders our choices meaningless. At its worst, unlimited government is tyrannical. At best, it imposes a dull uniformity that crushes true diversity and saps the independent spirit of the people. The founders believed that a crucial problem was to avoid creating a government that could be dominated by a single faction. That faction might be a minority, it might even be a majority, but no matter its size, it would inevitably seek to promote its own narrow interests at the expense of the liberties of the people. One purpose of the Constitution's checks and balances, one reason why it divides and limits power, is to restrain the ambition of the powerful and, in the words of the Constitution, to ensure that government genuinely promotes the general welfare. As the federal government has grown over the past 100 years, the business of government has increasingly become taking from Paul to benefit Peter, then borrowing from Peter to pay off Paul. What the supporters of big government call the general welfare is merely the artful distribution of favors to particular factions. The federal government is not supposed to be the most important institution in America. In securing the general welfare, it is supposed to do only those things that are provided for in the Constitution. It must, for example, provide for the common defense and regulate our relations with foreign countries. It must respect our right to enjoy the fruits of our labor by taxing lightly and defend the freedom of the marketplace by ensuring the rule of law. And it must remember that family and religion are where we learn virtue, and that without virtue, government cannot be both limited and free. Thomas Jefferson once said, "When all government shall be drawn to Washington as the center of all power, it will render powerless the checks provided, and it will become as venal and oppressive as the government from which we separated." John Adams said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." In the United States, government requires not merely the consent of the government, it rests ultimately on the ability of the people to govern themselves. The first role, the first duty of the people is to ensure that they remain virtuous and free. That's why the American system is based on the rights of the individual, but not on individualism. When Thomas Jefferson wrote in his notes on the state of Virginia that it is the manners and spirit of a people which preserve a republican vigor, he captured a vital truth of American freedom. The founders placed great hopes in the Constitution, but they knew that no paper constraints could preserve liberty. That duty rested ultimately with the American people. The role of the Constitution was to restrain and to check, and as Washington wrote, to raise a standard to which the wise and honest can repair. The words of the Declaration, the lives of the founders, and the design of the Constitution can inspire, but on their own, they cannot preserve the American Republic. Only the American people, steeped in the principles that inspired the founders and animated the Declaration, can do that. And America's virtues don't appear. They're not the result of individuals living in isolation. They're social virtues. They're nurtured in families. They're sustained in religious congregations. And they're fostered in the everyday interactions of work, hobbies, and life. Long before the Declaration of Independence, foreign observers were surprised by the number and vigor of America's social institutions and by the everyday democracy of American marriage, work, and family. Far more than any other nation in the world, Americans recognized each other as social and thus as political equals. That's why the traditional American value of self-reliance is so important and why the growth of government is so dangerous. Self-reliance means we have an obligation to try not to impose financially on our equals. Big government does not see citizens who provide for themselves and help their fellows. It sees subjects whom it must tax and upon whom it must spend. The wish of the founders was not for us to live as isolated individuals, nor was it to insulate government from religion and civil society. On the contrary, it was to insulate religion and civil society from government, to prevent government from weakening and corrupting it. The founders believed that if the sources of civic virtue remained free and strong, the American people would remain capable of self-government. There's no magic in the American people that can save them if they do not save themselves. That's why Ronald Reagan said in his famous speech on the evil empire of the Soviet Union that freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. As Americans, we always have an obligation to pass the inheritance of freedom on, unimpaired, to the next generation. That is the second duty of the people. Today, everyone says they're in favor of civil society, but not everyone understands what it means. When the left speaks of civil society, it often implies that it sees civil society as the government's agent, paid by the government to do the work that the government hasn't yet taken over. In the realm of diplomacy, civil society is a code word for self-nominated left-wing organizations that claim to speak for the people of the world and assert a moral authority greater than democratically elected governments. Abroad, the United States needs to stand up for the legitimacy of sovereign democracies, which are the only governments that allow genuine civil society to flourish. At home, Americans should not be taken in by the argument that civil society needs to be directed by the state in order to do good works. That's just another subterfuge that weakens civil society, conceals the big hand of government, and ultimately impoverishes us all, both spiritually and financially. This subterfuge rests on the deep contempt that the left has entertained for civil society since the 1960s, when it came to the conclusion that the job of government was to liberate us from our oppressive private lives. Churches, charities, or institutions like the Heritage Foundation are all part of civil society and can all do good work. But our bowling leagues, our scout troops, farm stands are equally part of civil society. Just because an institution is social does not mean that it is everyone's business. On the contrary, the power of civil society stems from the fact that so much of it is personal, not intended to remedy any broader problem. Government must be built on respect for the virtues that this civil society fosters, or it'll ultimately destroy civil society. The lesson of history from Europe is that as their governments have expanded, their charities, churches, and social institutions have shriveled. The United States is an island of stability in a world of turmoil. We have the same constitution today that we had over 200 years ago. Our concern to protect America from its enemies abroad and to promote American leadership in the world must never cause us to forget that our power to lead flows from our unique combination of a powerful but limited government with a dynamic and self-reliant society. When we see others abroad who share that vision and who are struggling against tyranny, we should give them our friendship. When we see a tyranny fall, we should applaud cautiously, knowing that democracy is created from the bottom up, not the top down. Our role in the world flows from what makes us exceptional: to defend and promote the universal principles on which the American people govern. That's the true role of the people, is to ensure that both they and their government stay faithful to those principles. This is partly a job for the free press and the ballot box, but we'll not be able to speak and vote in support of America's founding principles if we forget what those principles are. In his great farewell address from the Oval Office on January 11th of 1989, Ronald Reagan called on the nation to foster informed patriotism. Reagan believed that after the end of the Cold War, the spirit of patriotism was in the air, but he thought that wasn't good enough. For Reagan, patriotism had to be well-grounded in popular culture and to recognize always that America is freedom, and freedom is special and rare. American freedom began with the American memory. If that was not preserved, Reagan warned, the ultimate result would be the erosion of the American spirit. All great change in America, said Ronald Reagan, begins at the dinner table. And children, if your parents haven't been teaching you what it means to be an American, let them know and nail them on it. That would be a very American thing to do. And Reagan was right. We must understand our Constitution if we're to defend what we have achieved under it. We must know our history if we're to value the ordered liberty that the founders bequeathed to us. We must be free by governing ourselves. We must preserve our freedom for the next generation and stand for freedom at home and abroad. We, the people, created this republic. And we, the people, must preserve it. That's some strong stuff right there. And to me, it rings every bit as solidly true here today, 2017, as when I first read it back in the end of 2012, when I first started doing this stuff. You can find that at the Heritage Foundation. What is the role of the people? Just Google it and go ahead and find the link that takes you to Heritage Foundation. Boom, it's there. It takes, as you can see, it doesn't take hardly any time at all to read it. 15 minutes, maybe. It's an easy read. It's very clear. Dr. Follner is a remarkably intelligent and articulate man. And I think that, you know, share it around, because these are the things we need to know. My daytime gig, and one that I'm exceedingly proud of, is I work in the school system, and I work in a classroom with some really, really awesome kids who have a few things going on, and so because of that, they need a little bit of help. And that's what I do. And it's really cool because it's the same high school that I graduated from. Way back. Gee whiz. 37 years ago, 1980. Yeah. 37 years ago. Son of a long time, Dad. So I got like that whole welcome back, Cotter thing going for me. But I also pay attention because of my particular interests in this avenue of pursuit, and that is, and you know what, everybody, they say this word nationalist, and they say it like they're saying a bad word. And usually the people who say nationalist like it's a bad word are globalists. They're the one world order cats. And nationalism, a whiff of nationalism, you know, that's a very liberating thing for people. Look at what happened with Brexit when the United Kingdom decided that they no longer wish to be a part of the European Union. That freaked everybody out. And there are other nations that are going to be taking referendums as to whether or not they wish to remain. Nationalism. It's not a bad word. It's a good word. Especially here in the United States. The greatest nation on earth. Well, yeah, well, what about the time? Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, well, what about the other time when they could? Yeah, I know. I know. I didn't say it was the most perfect nation on earth. I said it was the greatest. It is the freest. Though you wouldn't be able to tell that if you were on any college campus here. I got a... Yeah, I think we got time to do it. The big watchword now, the Antifa clowns and others of those type have taken to describing anyone who isn't goose-stepping right in time with them as Nazis. And to me, that is just so ironic because these are the fools that are, they're the ones employing, they call us Nazis. While they wear black shirts, black outfits, they cover their face to hide their identity. And they employ Nazi tactics and Nazi brutality against people like us that have had it. We've had enough. But you never, especially from the left, and certainly from the left, you never hear anybody compared to the communists. And the question that we're going to ask now, and we already have the answer for it, like anybody that works with kids on a regular basis, I don't ask them a question that I don't know the answer to, because that way I will tell, I know for sure what. But anyway, here's the question. This is a Prager University clip. As you guys know, I love Dennis Prager and what he's doing with Prager University. And I share a lot of information. I get a lot of information from those guys, and I share it here with you all. And the question that we're asking today, the topic that we're talking about, is why isn't communism hated like Nazism? You never hear anybody say, oh, yeah, take that, you filthy commie, unless it's one of us talking to actual communists. No, the communists are calling us Nazis. They never call us commies. They never call us reds. They never call us anything like Nazis. Why? Because Nazis are bad. And you know what? Damn right they are. They're evil. That's why we destroyed them. But let's listen to what Dennis Prager has to say here. Why isn't communism hated the way Nazism is hated?
When people describe particularly evil individuals or regimes, why is it that they use the terms Nazi or fascist, but almost never communist? Given the unparalleled amount of human suffering communists have caused, why is communist so much less a term of revulsion than Nazi? Communists killed 70 million people in China, more than 20 million people in the Soviet Union, not including about 5 million Ukrainians, and almost one out of every three Cambodians. And communists enslaved entire nations in Russia, Vietnam, China, Eastern Europe, North Korea, Cuba, and much of Central Asia. They ruined the lives of well over a billion people. So why doesn't communism have the same terrible reputation as Nazism? Reason number one, there is, simply put, widespread ignorance of the communist record. Whereas both right and left loathe Nazism and teach its evil history, the left, and I'm talking about the left, not traditional liberals like Harry Truman or John F. Kennedy, has never loathed communism. And since the left dominates academia, almost no one teaches communism's evil history. Reason number two, the Nazis carried out the Holocaust. Nothing matches the Holocaust for pure evil. The rounding up of virtually every Jewish man, woman, child, and baby on the European continent and sending them to die is unprecedented and unparalleled. The communists killed far more people than the Nazis, but never matched the Holocaust in the systemization of genocide. The uniqueness of the Holocaust and the enormous attention rightly paid to it have helped ensure that Nazism has a worse name than communism. Reason number three, communism is based on nice sounding theories. Nazism isn't. It's based on heinous sounding theories. Intellectuals in general, including, of course, the intellectuals who write history, are seduced by words, so much so that they deem actions as less significant than words. For that reason, they haven't focused nearly as much attention on the horrific actions of communists as they have on the horrific actions of the Nazis. They dismiss the evils of communists as perversions of true communism. But they regard Nazi atrocities, correctly, as the logical and inevitable results of Nazism. Reason number four. Germans have thoroughly exposed the evils of Nazism, have taken responsibility for them, and have attempted to atone for them. Russians have not done anything similar regarding Lenin's or Stalin's horrors. To the contrary, Lenin, the father of Soviet communism, is still widely venerated in Russia. And as regards Stalin, as University of London Russian historian Donald Rayfield puts it, quote, people still deny, by assertion or implication, Stalin's Holocaust, unquote. Even less so has China exposed the greatest mass murderer and enslaver of them all, Mao Zedong. Mao remains revered in China. Every Chinese currency note has his picture on it. Until Russia and China and Vietnam and Cuba and North Korea acknowledge the evils their countries committed under communism, communism's evils will remain less known than the evils of the German state under Hitler. Reason number five, communists murdered mostly their own people. The Nazis, on the other hand, killed very few fellow Germans. World opinion, that largely meaningless and amoral term, deems the murder of members of one's own group far less noteworthy than the murder of outsiders. That's why, for example, blacks killing millions of fellow blacks in Africa elicits almost no attention from world opinion. And reason number six, in the view of the left, the last good war was World War II. The war against German Nazism and Japanese fascism. The left does not regard wars against communist regimes as good wars. For example, the American war against Vietnamese communism is regarded as immoral, and the war against Korean communism and its Chinese communist backers is simply ignored. Until the left and all the institutions influenced by the left acknowledge how evil communism has been, we will continue to live in a morally confused world. In the meantime, all good people owe it to the victims of communism to learn what happened to them. Even worse than being murdered or enslaved is a world that doesn't even know that you were. I'm Dennis Prager. To keep our videos free, click here.
Dennis Prager, Prager University. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not really one to tell, you know, to encourage you to do one thing or another, but when it comes to this, when it comes to the thinkers and the people who are involved with Prager University doing what they do, I want to encourage you, if you can, I know times are tight and maybe you can't, and they understand that too, but if you can, give a buck, $2, $3, it all counts. It goes, you know, for something. And if it resonates with you and you believe in it, definitely. I just want to encourage you guys to do that. Bottom of the hour, we're going to take a break. We will be back here in about 5 minutes. give or take a lie or two. And hopefully at that time we will have, we're expecting a report from an individual who is supposed to be on the scene in New Orleans as they remove the monument, the statue of General Pierre Beauregard. And we'll be looking at that on the other side of this. More of ACP here in just a little bit.
We'll be right back.
How about that? You thought I wasn't paying attention, and by damn, you would be right. No, I was I was in the green room there talking briefly with a gentleman who's on the scene down in New Orleans, and he's been there for the I'm not going to say demolition, because they're not tearing them apart. The disposition ultimately is there. I understand they're going to be gathered up into a private park. But we have Ricky with us on the line. Ricky, thanks for joining us here. Welcome to A Conservative's Perspective.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What's we were talking there in the break. That's why I was late getting back. I was talking with Rick here. What do you see there as you're observing the video that you're watching around the statue area?
Right now it is 6:37 p.m. in New Orleans, and right now we have numerous flaggers out there, numerous pro-monument people who are very peaceful people, very nice and well-spoken people. They're all out there just pretty much flying the flag. They have some children out there as well. People holding up signs, a lot of vehicles passing. You know, the corner where the monument is, very, very high traffic area, you know. So it's right outside of City Park, right by the New Orleans Museum of Art. The vibe right now is kind of a scary vibe, you know, in a sense. The New Orleans Police Department yesterday had a few drones flying over us, watching us, kind of surveying the area. Then today they then moved in with numerous barricades, about 200 in total, and they also had another drone watching us. They also put out these really, really, really big floodlights so that they can illuminate the area while they're doing the removal at night. And a local firefighter who told me that he had spoke with some high up ranking people in the New Orleans Police Department. They said that it is coming down tonight. So in about 22 minutes at 7 p.m. New Orleans time, they will be moving in, most likely clearing all the monument supporters off, setting up the barricade, setting up the perimeter, whatever their plan is. There's multiple news crews out there. There's also some you know, not just local, but there's national news attention as well.
We haven't talked about it yet, but one of the things that I do want to bring up, and I'm not exactly sure even how valid or how real the threat it is, but you'll be able to tell us since you're there, and that has to do with Antifa.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to finish up the question. Basically, I'm no doubt they have a presence there. I'm just wondering if it is as forbidding and threatening as they would like to see themselves to be.
Well, you know, Antifa is a unique organization. If you look at all of their Facebook profiles, which we've been able to access, you know, they all represent communism, Marxism, basically everything that they claim that they're for, they really are not, and it's the exact opposite. They're basically really good at projecting. What they do is since they're so very well organized, and they all hang out together and go party and do social activities together and whatnot, you know, what they're going to do is a surprise attack, if anything. Now, just the other day, not yesterday, but the day before, a beautiful little 9-year-old girl, innocent little sweetheart girl, was out there with her parents while they were out there in support of the monuments. It was still daytime, and four males in a vehicle drove by and shot the little girl several times with paintballs. And And the paintballs had also struck another gentleman, too. And this had happened 2 weeks ago as well, where a group of subjects in a vehicle drove by, shot paintballs, made death threats, saying, if you're still going to stand out here tomorrow, we're going to come back and kill you. Well, they did come back the next day, and they pointed a semi-automatic handgun at one of our flaggers. And, you know, these people mean business. You know, Antifa's not playing around. They need to be taken more serious by the government. You know, I really love what Mike Cernovich did at the White House press briefing when he called out all the reporters. But, you know, I've been seeing, because I've been out here on the ground. I'm a local to New Orleans. I've been out here on the ground since they removed the Battle of Liberty Place monument. And they had the Antifa guy there flying the Antifa flag. And it's funny because the Antifa flag is exactly the same flag that the communists flew in Germany in 1933. And they all cover their faces. They all sing the same chants. You know, they'll come by, they'll yell out, "Whose street? Our street." You know, they say all this crazy stuff. They come in packs. You know, I'm sure if I would run into one of them at the gas station or the grocery store, they'd run and hide. But they come in packs. And the worst attack on us was May Day, May 1st. And we were at the Jeff Davis Monument at Canal Street and Jeff Davis Parkway in New Orleans in the mid-city area. And, you know, we were being attacked. Bottles were being thrown at people. One woman who was handicapped, who was a monument supporter, she had made a comment about her son who had served overseas and had died for our country. And the Antifa people responded with, "Well, that's good that your son died. He probably deserved it." And they called her some curse words and some derogatory things. And they threw a glass bottle at her, and the police were there. And this is just one of the many attacks on the pro-monument people who have remained peaceful throughout this whole ordeal. But I'm going to just tell you about this one, because this is the one that really, really gets to me. The police were right there standing there, and we have all of it on video. And they just say, you know, "I'm sorry. We have a stand-down order from our lieutenant and our commander to not take action." And I myself was even smacked in the face by one of the Antifa females. So, you know, it's unfortunate. And then what we did later, after everything kind of cooled down, we walked across the street and we were calling on the phone with 911 so that somebody could come out and take a report in reference to this woman getting a bottle thrown at her. And while that was going on, an Antifa girl who we identified, she works at Loyola University in New Orleans as a teacher, I would assume, or does something over there, but she came over and decided to mace the handicapped woman. You know, so just to give you an idea of how Antifa rolls, you know what I mean? They're very scary people, in a sense of they're wimps, they're jerks.
So
you know, they do these things and then they run.
So in your estimation, You expect some kind of violence to take place this evening at the Beauregard removal?
Well, you know, when it first all started at Jeff Davis, the police were showing us that they didn't care what happened to us. You know, even this lady, Miss Arlene, got her phone smashed to the ground in front of the police. The police did not take action. But there was a particular Sunday a couple of weeks ago where the Antifa people were going to meet us at Lee Circle, where General Lee's monument is, six stories high, in New Orleans, in the Warehouse District. And Antifa showed up with the Take 'em Down NOLA people. And Take 'em Down NOLA, by the way, is a group that's founded in New Orleans by a gentleman by the name of Malcolm Suber, S-U-B-E-R. And he heads up Take 'em Down NOLA. His logo for his group is Andrew Jackson, one of the former presidents, a great man, being lynched. His logo is Andrew Jackson being lynched. So anyway, everything's escalated so much in the past couple weeks. To tell you the truth, I can't say for a fact that any violence may occur tonight, but there is a very high chance of it. We have ran off people who attempted to vandalize the monument the night before last. Even last night, a vehicle pulled up, dropped off a guy, and he started to come and run and grab our flags. We advanced at him and asked him, what was he doing? Why was he tampering with our property and disturbing our peace? So he ran and got back in the car and took off. And also the City Park Police Department has been very helpful in making patrols. But, you know, the New Orleans Police Department as it is, you know, is very understaffed. And New Orleans just passed up Chicago in reference to violent crimes and murders and everything. So it's hard for them to come out right away and take swift action like a normal police department would. You know what I mean?
So this is something that you think Antifa will use to its advantage?
Yeah, I mean, they can. You know, they have multiple resources. They have a deuce and a half army vehicle. They have another army vehicle that you could kind of call it a deuce and a half, but it's really not. It's a little bit smaller. It's more like a cargo type vehicle.
Right.
Even when Jeff Davis was being removed, an Antifa member came on our side of the barricade, because what NOPD did was they separated both parties. They separated the opposing party on one side and they separated us on the other side and made a buffer zone to where nothing would happen. And they had about 80 to 100 officers out there just to watch and be present. But see, Antifa, it's weird how they operate. You know, they'll light a flare and throw it into a crowd, or they'll do a Molotov cocktail, or, you know, if they could spot that a vehicle belongs to you, they'll go and vandalize it. They'll throw bottles at you.
So terrorism,
hit you with things,
and intimidation, basically.
Right. Yeah. It's terrorism. Yeah. They're a domestic terror organization, and they come from different parts of the nation. What it really is it's they have little groups of them in each major city, you know, and then
Right. Wherever
the big focus is, whatever protest is going on, whether it be UC Berkeley or Orlando, or when they were in Boston this past weekend, or New Orleans, the whole pack will come and assemble, and then they'll also join forces with other parties. Even the new Black Panther Party was present as well recently in the last few days. But for today, what's going on really is just, you know, in my opinion, probably at 7 p.m., they're going to go ahead and more than likely shut everything down, or maybe they may wait a little bit. But I got word from a New Orleans fireman, like I said, that it is going to take place today. There's numerous unmarked police vehicles that keep circling the area. There's marked police units that keep circling the area. There is a large presence of pro-monument people, and it keeps growing, so that's good. But, you know, if Mitch Landrieu, who is operating and acting as a Marxist communist dictator, comes through and decides to do what he set out to do, there's really nothing that we can do to stop him, because we would just face jail, you know. And House Bill 71 just passed yesterday, and now it's going to the representatives, and then it'll go to the governor. And what that bill would do is, if everything goes well with that, that will make it to where the city has to allow the people to vote on it, whether the monuments stay or go down. And then also City Park, where Beauregard is located, it's basically City Park's property. So now City Park is stepping in, and they are kind of trying to say, you know, this is our property. You can't touch it now. So we've had two good things happen for us yesterday and today. But Mitch Landrieu, like I said, he does not care what happens. He has his agenda, and he's doing it. And he's doing it swiftly, and forcefully, and it's very crooked and corrupt. And there's just something, there's something way bigger to this picture, you know. I mean, Al Sharpton and George Soros. I know for sure Sharpton was here, but I heard George Soros. I don't have any true proof of Soros, but both of them supposedly had been in town in the last few weeks and met with Mitch Landrieu. And my deal is that Mitch Landrieu is ending his second term as mayor in a few months, so he will no longer be around. And supposedly he has a job in Washington set up for him with Sharpton making a bunch of money, and he's even spoken about running for president in 2020, which is a laughing joke. But so I think that maybe, you know, this is probably something that one of the people at his next job want done. I really don't know, but we're doing everything that we can to try and prevent it. We have multiple committees. The Monumental Task Force Committee has been phenomenal. We've had some help from other out-of-state organizations, different SCV chapters and organizations, and the Alabama Flaggers have helped us out a lot. So, you know, we're doing what we can, but, you know, you got to understand we're living in a very corrupt and crooked city and also living in some very weird times, you know, so.
Interesting, to say the very least. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Ricky Entwistle, native NOLA, and he's been at Ground Zero here during the entire time that, politically elected and otherwise appointed vandals have been desecrating the Crescent City. And what I'm talking about, if you haven't noticed, they've been removing all the Confederate monuments within town. And I just can't help but think, Rick, I'm gonna let you go here. I want to thank you. It's been an excellent report, and I've enjoyed tremendously talking to you. And I know our listeners have appreciated everything that you've had to tell us about this. Do you anticipate at some point, whether they want to or not, it's going to be involuntary, I think. It's a win-win situation for the Antifa types, because if they act violently and the response from, for lack of a better term, our side is fundamentally passive and to accept and turn the other cheek, they win. But if there is a violent response in kind, then they've aggravated this situation and they've escalated the tension. And again, they win. It's a damnably frustrating situation for we as Americans who love the country to find ourselves in.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, It's very sad that we have these Antifa factions and these other factions that are basically being, and you got to listen to this really carefully, because I really love saying this to people and they love it as well. They are offended because they are told to be offended. These people do not look at history for what it is. They don't open a book. They don't do nothing. They don't know how great of a man General G.T. Beauregard was. They don't know how great of a man General Robert E. Lee was, and all the things that they've done for the city and the state and for the 13 states and the Confederacy. They don't know about Jefferson Davis. They don't know none of that. And then another thing to kind of give you some good insight into it, all of these monuments have time capsules in them, and these monuments are well over a century old. So where are these time capsules going, we want to know? Is the commie dictator mayor taking them and just kind of, you know, doing whatever he wants with them? There's even some guy that's opening up a slave museum somewhere within a distance of an hour away or whatever from New Orleans. We don't want these monuments there, because the battle between the states is what it was really called. The battle between the states didn't have anything to do with slavery. It didn't start because of that or anything. And actually, if the states in the South hadn't seceded, slavery would have continued for much longer than it did. And it's just very sad that these people choose to believe these liberal you know, type people who are in power, and they just listen to them and they go with it. They don't have the brain or anything to look up for themselves.
Well, as a Confederate Civil War reenactor for the last 22 years, believe me, Reverend, I'm the deacon. I'm the guy sitting in the high back turret point right behind you, and I hear you, and amen. And
right.
I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for being with us. This is an unfolding thing, Ricky, and we know that the situation down in New Orleans in terms of Antifa and folks like us is a fluid one, and that tension ebbs and flows given certain circumstances. And maybe as this thing unfolds, you can swing back in here and let us know how things are going.
Sure, yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I would definitely love to do that because, you know, I'm sure that there's going to be more documentation that we'll retrieve via video that we'll use from our cell phones or different types of cameras that we'll have. But, you know, it's just, I mean, man, if you'd have been there on Monday, May 1st, when everything went down, man, you would have really felt like you were in Nazi Germany or something because, I mean, it was crazy. You know, you're sitting there witnessing, like, that handicapped woman get battered and assaulted. You're witnessing all these other horrible things. Even that night, a 5-year-old girl had got pepper sprayed by Antifa. You know, they're ruthless, man, and the cops didn't do nothing. And, I mean, I'm looking at the cops, and I'm very pro-police. I back the blue 24/7. You know, if I see a cop getting into a fight with somebody, I'm compelled to jump out of my car and assist them. But when I'm witnessing these police just standing there and watching these people get battered and assaulted by such a communist group, it really makes you think, like, what the hell is going on? And that's why I'm telling you, I think that there's something much, much bigger going on that we don't know about that hopefully one day, since it is so dark, it will be brought to the light. I pray for that day to come.
And let's hope that we're able to talk about it when it does. Ricky, I've enjoyed very much talking to you. I'm out of time. I've got to let you go, but you'll be back to talk to us real soon. I'm sure of that. I'll get in touch with Denise, and we have a conduit to one another that way. God bless you. We appreciate everything
definitely.
That you're doing. Ricky Entwistle, ladies and gentlemen. Take good care, Rick. Well, you can see what's going on here. We're about out of time. ACP can be heard Tuesdays and Thursdays live right here at the Patriot Nation Radio Network studios here at Blog Talk Radio. You can also hear us on Red Nation Rising Radio, the Internet Conservative Radio Network, WSTR Digital Broadcasting, and hopefully on Thursday a simulcast through the studios here at Patriot Nation, along with News Without Filters. Until then, you guys take good care of yourselves, and we will be back taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. You guys, we'll see you then.